Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Toyota of Brookhaven has been voted best new car dealership in Southwest Mississippi 4 years in a row. Come see the difference. Exit 40 Brookhaven or online at toyotabrookhaven.com. Great service, great savings. At Toyota of Brookhaven, we deliver.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Well studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music as we kick off a brand new week here. Rhino,
howdy, howdy.
Well, I like that weather out there. It was awfully dreary on Saturday, and then it got chilly yesterday a bit. When that front swept through the Magnolia State, that wind was a bit nippy. Yesterday afternoon, I was out on the golf course, and man, I felt like I was playing in February as opposed to April. But it's looking good today. We are definitely blessed with a gorgeous spring day here across the Magnolia State.
And in typical Mississippi weather fashion,
yep,
by the end of the week, some parts of the Magnolia State will be in the lower 90s.
Wow. Unbelievable. So, you shared with me a story Friday about an individual who set themselves ablaze out in front of the courthouse there, right?
Where
the Trump hush money trial is occurring in Midtown New York there. And then, if we learned anything about this person, I mean, this was bizarre, right? I think we have.
Yeah, he was, not to speak ill of the dead, because he has now passed away due to his injuries, but he was a deeply mentally disturbed individual, a conspiracy theorist to the nth degree. So much so that he believed in his conspiracies enough to set himself on fire in front of the courthouse. Before doing so, though, he apparently littered the ground with pamphlets and possibly, I don't know if it was the same day, but there's a picture of him holding up a sign that is basically saying, Biden and Trump are both working to coup us.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So on that basis, one just sets themselves afire.
Seems to be the protest du jour.
I got you. Well, I got a couple of feel-good stories I wanted to share this morning. I wanted to clarify that because I felt like that was left over from Friday. So just when you think that people have kind of reached the bottom in terms of their compassion for their fellow human being, and there's no doubt, there are crazy examples of that every day. There's a story about a Taco Bell manager who saves an infant's life. The baby stopped breathing. You see this story?
Well,
the baby stops breathing.
Manager dropped her headset and ran outside.
Yeah, to assist the mother. The mother was, of course, hysterical. Baby turning blue, and this was in Pennsylvania. And the Taco Bell manager, who understands and knows how to administer CPR, gets involved and performed CPR, saving the baby's life. Quote, we couldn't be more grateful to Becky. This is from the mother of the baby. She saved my son's life. And the Taco Bell manager said, I'm just a mom helping a mom. I didn't do anything different from what anyone else should be doing. But did she? You wonder sometimes, do you not, whether or not everybody in our society understands just the basics of human kindness and compassion. This person jumped out of the Taco Bell there. There's video of it. You've seen the video. It's heart-wrenching, honestly, because you see the baby blue. You can clearly see the baby clutched in the mother's arms, and the mother's just moving about. This is outside of the vehicle, near it, in the drive-through line. Incredible. Hats off. Give this lady a dang raise, I'm saying. And, again, she's so humble about it. Man, this is just an indication of the goodness that still lives in the hearts and minds of people in America. And then another one, Rhino, in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Hey. A vehicle, a video of that as well, on fire, ablaze, on a highway. It looks like it's a kind of an urban area next to the guardrail. And then this thing is on fire, this vehicle, little SUV. Looks like it's a frontage road, perhaps, next to an interstate. And a group of Good Samaritans, they get out of their vehicle. They stop. They get out of their vehicles. And they run to this vehicle, which is on fire. I mean, 20-foot blazes coming out of this thing. You can't hardly see the vehicle, honestly, through the fire itself. And these people said they were getting hit in the face by these flames, but the door itself was blocked by that guardrail. And so a highway worker sees it and has a tool, comes over and smashes open the window, and the group pulled this man out of the car, saving that man's life. It's just incredible. This is the America that I know, that I love. I think it illustrates, it's this giant silent majority, is it not, of good people in this country that act just impulsively. Hey, there's somebody that's going to die if we don't get this person out. And they spring into action. To a great extent, let's be honest, risking their own lives. You got a vehicle on fire like that? Anything could happen. Thing could explode. And watching the view of these people pulling that door open, I mean, just four or five of them all joining together, using their collective strength to get that door open.
Yeah, because they got it unlocked, but it was still
blocked.
It was wet. Well, the other side was blocked by the guardrail. The door wouldn't open on their side because of the way the car had impacted.
Yeah.
The crush zone had pushed back on the hinge. So the door was not mechanically inclined to open. They had to force it.
Unbelievable. I'm just looking at a still photo here. One, two, three, four, five, six people all working together to get that door open and pull that person to safety. Man. It's just the right thing to do. What happened to that concept in this country? It's just the right thing to do. I guarantee you, if you talk to every one of these people, they'd say, no, we're not heroes. We just did the right thing. And then I'm sorry to report the quite opposite, an antithetical situation to these acts of kindness and human compassion. And that would be on America's college campuses, where the most elite, spoiled brats on the planet have no problem spewing, spouting, disgusting hate speech, anti-Semitism rhetoric at Columbia this weekend, Yale, with impunity. The president of Columbia should resign. You think about this. Now there are Jewish students at these elite Ivy League schools who are being told by professors of those schools, go home. Get your education virtually. Now, imagine you've worked your academic career as a youngster to be accepted to these schools, which are incredibly rigorous and very expensive, and now you're being told to go home because of the fear you have. And you witness videos of other students in the faces of these Jewish students, essentially wishing death on them. It's incredible that that's even happening in this country. Those of you that are around my age or even older, remember the 60s and the protest on college campuses, but that was largely about a ridiculous war in Vietnam. Though I condemn them for their treatment and their behavior to those who just were called to serve their country and did it in Vietnam, I understand their reasoning, their rationale for taking to the streets on their college campuses and protesting what was a ridiculous war that nobody understood what we were in it for, and we were losing lots of young men. We're coming right back. We got Senator Jeremy England at 11:05 today.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Monday morning feels so bad. Everybody seems to nag me. Coming Tuesday, I feel better. Even my old man looks good. Wednesday just don't go. Thursday goes too slow. I have Friday on my mind. Gonna have fun in my city.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We are live in the Element Well studio. Again, Senator Jeremy England joins Middays at 11:05. It's Monday. That means Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors at 12:05. It's big conference week going on down there at the Capitol, Rhino. I've noticed that many measures have had conferees assigned to them from the respective houses. That's the way it works.
I think the original plan was to have conference weekend over the weekend.
Right.
They didn't quite get all their ducks in a row to get that done.
Looks like we're headed for conference week, maybe, right?
Yeah.
And again, we've pointed this out on the program before. It's not exactly as you might think, where these conferees go gather up in a room somewhere in the Capitol and sit around the table hashing out ideas and cobbling together some legislation they think could pass in the respective houses and become law. In fact, they can conduct such communications in a variety of ways, including email and text and web conferencing calls, phone calls, etc., letters. And I think this is a year, however, where we're witnessing a number of high-profile matters that will be conferenced. One of those is education funding. I put that at the top of the heap because in the general fund, you heard us talking to Senator Josh Harkins about this past Friday. We appreciate the senator coming on. Thought it was a good interview. Learned a lot. And, of course, education funding consumes just over half of the general fund. And we have two separate approaches this year. Rather than the business as usual, let's just fund in accordance with the traditional MAEP formula that has existed for quite some time. The House, lo and behold, comes up with a total overhaul named the INSPIRE Act. I don't remember what the acronym stands for. That's a lot of words in a bill name to be acronymed. INSPIRE, of course, out of the House. And it's a completely different approach to funding K through 12 education in the great state of Mississippi. On the other side of the Capitol, in the Senate, their approach was more one of, well, let's just kind of do some adjustments to the way the MAEP, the existing formula, works. And they crossed the hall, they traveled a short distance to each respective chamber. And
here you go. Here's the acronym.
Thank you.
Ready for this?
Yep.
Investing in the needs of students to prioritize impact and reform education.
Okay, gotcha. Well, you remember early in the session, we had Education Chairman Rob Robertson and Vice Chair Kent McCarty on the program when they explained the formula to us, and we appreciate that. But here's where we are, folks. We got no consensus between the two houses on the respective plans from the other chambers. Thus, we're headed to conference. I don't know. I got this sneaking suspicion we may not get anything out of the conference. Might we be headed to a special session to fund education? We shall keep an eye on that one. The other big issue that's being debated, mobile sports betting. You heard on our news clip at the break, Caleb Saylor's on with Mr. Gallo this morning, on with us on Friday. It was Kelly on with us Friday, right? Yeah.
Caleb
was on Friday. Okay. I'm getting confused between the weeks. Kelly the prior week. So, Caleb, of course, informed our audience on the Gallo Show this morning that the mobile sports betting deal is, of course, headed to conference. That's a bill that originated in the House, passed. Representative Casey Urey went to the Senate, got to the Senate Gaming Committee, which is chaired by Democrat Senator David Blunt, and they did a strike all. So it's headed to conference. Might we get something out of that? Not sure. And then we got the various alcohol bills as well. Forgot about that. Where is that headed? Representative Hank Zuber, I know, he talked about that on the program last week. He's been a strong advocate for, what did he say, Rhino? Mississippi needs to get in the 20th century or something to that effect. With respect to regulation of alcohol. And so really in play there is the direct shipment of wines that are not distributed by the state-operated ABC warehouse distribution facility. And then the other, of course, is extending liquor licenses such as the likes of Costco and Trader Joe's, who have said, we'd come if we could get our liquor license to the coast and other areas of the state potentially as well. So those are at play and at least still alive from the standpoint of hammering out maybe something that is passable in conference. That's where we are on that. The SAFER Act is another one. This is legislation passed.
Well, Zuber's wine shipping thing is showing dead in committee.
Well, I think I could be wrong, but he was texting me over the weekend. I think there's still something that, I guess, got inserted elsewhere to possibly.
It wouldn't be in his vehicle.
Right, that would keep it alive. Senate Bill 2405 is what he told me he thought it was. We'll take a look at that. But there's some indication from him, at least, that it's still alive in that way. So that's the game that gets played. This is where the expression comes from, dead, dead, and dead. what do you see there? Senate Bill 2405. It's what he told me not so long ago, that some of that language got inserted to keep that issue alive. We shall see. The another big one, of course, is PERS, the Public Employees Retirement System. Where do we stand on that? You heard Senator David Parker on the program last week discussing that, as well as Senator Harkins. The skinny on that, the background, the House passed a bill which would reconstitute the board of the Public Employees Retirement System, changing it from its current structure, where the PERS membership elects 8 of the 10 members from the various PERS groups. This bill would increase the board to a size of 11, add one member, of which 7 would be appointed, 2 elected by the PERS membership, and then 1 appointed by the governor, as it is the case now, typically the commissioner of the Division of Revenue, and then the state treasurer also has a seat on that board. So where that stands right now is that that bill went across the hall to the Senate, never got a vote in committee. Senator Chris Johnson said he didn't have the votes, thus he didn't put it on the committee floor, didn't put it before the committee. But another bill over there received an amendment from Senator Parker. That amendment would do two things. First, it would cancel the scheduled 2% employer contribution increase scheduled for July 1st. It would also strip such power away from the PERS board, that power specifically being the ability to increase the employer contribution rate. So there's concern still among the PERS membership that when they get to conference, because that would include members of the House, trying to think of who all got assigned to that. I want to say it was Representative DeWeese and Creekmore come to mind. I think there's one more. Nonetheless, they're going to conference, and the concern among the House, among the PERS membership, is that they may reinsert the language to reconstitute the board. So they're staying vigilant on that legislation as well. And then Medicaid expansion. We've got two different approaches, one from the House, one from the Senate. They're going to conference as well. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
Those who are. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Love is but a song we sing. Fears we will die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Those are good ears on the wing, and you may not know why.
Welcome back, everyone. The Youngbloods, that's kind of appropriate music when we were talking about the protests around the country during the Vietnam era. And that's what it feels like today, except, I mean, they were protesting for a cause that honestly I think reflected the sentiment of a lot of Americans back then, right? It was like, what are we doing in this dumb war? Sending America's youth over to this foreign land, fighting a war nobody could tell us what for. And what do we lose? 50,000, 55,000, I believe, right, in Vietnam? Unbelievable. Average age of 19? It's actually a song. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. 19, I think, something to that effect, which highlights that statistical fact. Sad time in the nation's history. But they truly were peaceful protests. It was, I think, kind of the era.
Most were.
Yeah,
on college campuses.
Yeah. But then, now in the streets, in Watts and Detroit, Chicago, different story. Different purpose, though. That wasn't protesting the war. But this situation here, where you've got students spewing hate for other students on the campus to their face, what is wrong with you? And calling for, I mean, you've seen some of the chants, some of the familiar chants, from the river to the sea and all that kind of stuff. Now they're calling for the death, the destruction of this country. I say, get the hell out of here. Unbelievable. You little spoiled brat. In denouncing aspects, features of this country that they enjoy, that they utilize, that they experience every day. Are they just that ill-informed? Are they that?
Yes.
That's sad. This is the next generation we expect to lead us? Not just in government and politics, but in the boardrooms, in the C-suites? You're not qualified. I'm just going to say it right now. If you don't get your act together, in fact, I'll make this assertion. The lady we talked about when we kicked the show off, the Taco Bell manager that saved a baby's life, seeing that the baby had stopped breathing as the mother cried out for help in the drive-thru, she's more qualified to lead at a high level than these idiots on these college campuses that are full of all their stupid, worthless education, most of them.
That's why I used the phrase intellectual moron at the end of last week. It's entirely possible to be educated well beyond your ability to comprehend.
Agree.
But because none of these activists are actually thinking for themselves. They're just regurgitating what they see online to feel better about their miserable existence.
I think that's right. Hey, there's a cause. Let's go join in. What are we chanting? I mean, really, it appears that way. But I think the point I'm trying to make here is, I don't care how much stuff you learn out of all those books and in those classrooms. If you don't understand just the basics of human dignity and respect and compassion and kindness, essentially the instructions from God above, you're not qualified to do squat. You're a menace to society. You're not an asset whatsoever. It's sickening to see this happening in this country. It does me. And I don't know if you guys have seen a couple of these people, again, who get in the faces of other students, Jewish students, knowing they're Jewish, and get in their faces and essentially spew all this hate. Where's all the hate speech people on the left? Look, you can go spew it all day long, but when you start harassing and intimidating and preventing them from carrying on their lives, you've crossed the Rubicon. That's not what the First Amendment protects.
Well, the perfect example of these people's entitlement and hypocrisy is they go out of their way to try to find the identities and identifying information of those that might show up to a protest and not agree with them. But every single idiot waving a Palestinian flag and chanting death to Israel has a mask covering their face because they are terrified of their identity being put out there, even though they're the ones out in public showing their rear end.
No doubt about it. Yeah, it's not for COVID and all that crap. Not whatsoever. They can make it appear as such because there are still a lot of people. You see them out there. I just want to ask them. I really do. Why you got that on? I mean, I really do. Unbelievable. I agree. It's an effort to conceal their identity. Freaking coward. It's sickening, though, that this is happening in this country. And that's why I wanted to highlight these two Good Samaritan stories, because I do not think this small number of people with big dang mouths represents the silent majority in this country. And that silent majority term, first time I ever heard it was when I was a kid. And it referred to, hey, most people really do agree with these protesters back in the 60s protesting this stupid war. I could never forget LBJ when he announced to the country, I ain't running for re-election. And I'm paraphrasing a bit.
Well, that was to avoid the embarrassment of coming in third in the primary.
Well, yeah, and it was because he was the one that was behind the war. And he said to the people, of course, back then you only got the news, national news, once a day from the major networks. And he had televisions installed in the Oval Office there so we could watch it, multiple televisions, so we could watch the various networks' coverage. And every single night it was the KIA and MIA and Wounded as well. And so many reporters in the fields in Vietnam. Yeah, it was the war on television, first time. And he said something to the effect with America's young sons dying in the fields. I can't remember the exact statement he made, but he was stressed. He needed to be stressed, honestly. He said, I will not seek or accept the nomination from my party. You're right. Fat chance he would have gotten it, honestly. And it was largely because of the war.
If I'm remembering history class correctly, I think he also announced that they would stop bombing north of the 19th parallel in that same speech.
Seems like that's right. Yeah.
So they could enter peace talks.
Very controversial.
Which those peace talks started and went nowhere in a hurry.
Yeah. Very controversial. You're absolutely right. But nonetheless, I think the silent majority agreed with the college student protesters protesting the war. It was also featured, of course, in the famous movie, Tom Hanks. Yep. So who could forget that? That was actually a fairly accurate representation of what was going on. Berkeley or bust, remember? Now it's a bunch of left-wing loons on these campuses that hate Israelis and hate America. I don't think I saw so much hate for the country back then. It was more about hating the war. Yes, it is true. When our service men and women returned, it was despicable how they were treated. Spitting on them, calling them baby killers, etc. Man, they just did what they were asked to do by their country. They were drafted. Any of them? Grunts, as they called them?
Which at that point, it's not really an ask. It's more of a tell.
That's exactly right. They were just doing their duty. Many of them agreed with the protesters, honestly, and saw atrocities that no human should ever have to witness. So I condemn them for the way they mistreated our servicemen and women. But their protest was on spot on. This is different. These people, they're supporting terrorists. They are condoning the massacre of innocent civilians.
And they're all being led by their nose rings.
That's very true. Back in the Element Well studio after this break. We got text to get to. Stay with us.
Come on, come on.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. We're in the Element Well studio. So, in Biden's America, by the way, Rhino, with the thousands upon thousands, actually millions since he's been in office, crossing the border, dispersing into the country, not only is it costing us a bunch of money, not only is it increasing the prospect of some sort of major act of violence, because there's a lot of suspicious people crossing over that just look like that's what they're here for, and there's even reports and warnings from the FBI to this effect. But you got a Home Depot in New York with the increase in crime, much of which is coming from these illegals, that has hired security guards to patrol the outside of the store.
Complete with guard dogs.
Right, with dogs. And you've got the cancellation of soccer games. You seen this in New York? Because the illegals, yes, that's what they are, they're illegals. I know that offends the people on the left when we refer to them as such. They're illegals.
Seems like they need to be offended a little bit. Maybe grow a little thicker skin so they quit being such whiny babies whenever reality sets in.
Agree. So they have commandeered a soccer complex, the fields, right? An encampment on the fields. They can't play soccer, and there are reports that the kids don't even want to if they clear the area. This is ridiculous. So now we've got illegals robbing America's children of their childhood. You only get to do that once. Man, that hurts me. Oh, but so the reality is we have an administration whose deference tilts to illegals before it does American citizens, including American children. Man, that's insidious. They got to go. They absolutely got to go. In Congress this weekend, folks, if you were tracking it, a series of bills were passed in the House that would provide funding to Ukraine, to Israel, to Taiwan. And there's another bill that would ban TikTok. What's going to happen in the Senate? It would ban TikTok unless TikTok divests from CCP position, equity position, in the main company that produces and operates the platform. So you'll know, Rhino, please check me on this. Though our Republican congressman in the House voted for the procedure, the rule allowing the bill to advance, in my research, it appears they all voted against the Ukraine bill, the Ukraine funding bill. Is that what you're saying? That's what I gather. I got to tell you, I didn't check Representative Benny Thompson. I just sort of assumed he was in support. But I guess you could say the thing passed on a bipartisan basis. Well, I don't guess it. I know it because it did receive, the Republicans were fairly evenly split. Nay and yay. I'm talking about Ukraine specifically. Is that what you're saying, Rhino? Was it 311 to 112 or something like that, I think was the final tally.
For the Ukraine supplemental appropriation.
Ukraine, right. Specifically that. I'm more focused on that. I think that is what gets more opposition from Republicans than the support for Israel. $95 billion total package, 61 for Ukraine, 26 for Israel, 8 for Indo-Pacific security. The fourth bill, by the way, would place sanctions on the seizure of the frozen Russian assets that could be used, liquidated then to use to funding these measures. 311 to 112, Ukraine, very contentious legislation. Israel, 366 to 58, these are the votes, yay and nay, respectively. 385, 34, Indo-Pacific aid, and then the Iran sanctions bill we just talked about, TikTok, 360 to 58. Lawmakers in the Senate are expected to take it up on tomorrow. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the firebrand representative from the great state of Georgia, was all over the news as well, Rhino, with various interviews, calling for the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, to resign, calling him a Speaker of the Uniparty. When she introduced, by the way...
Just remember, the Uniparty is the same people that the guy who set himself on fire claimed was ruling the country.
Oh, gosh, that's nice.
Just for context.
They're out for 2 weeks. We're going to have Representative Michael Guest on Wednesday, we learned this morning. Out for 2 weeks. She says when they get back in 2 weeks, she's putting her bill on the floor, and she expects that the Speaker will be gone. We're coming right back with Senator Jeremy England.
And now, another hour of the talk that keeps Mississippi talking. Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Begin your transition now.
Now on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's hour two of Middays. We are live in the Element Well studio. It's Monday. That means Super Talk Outdoors with Ricky Matthews at 12:05. But right now, it's Senator Jeremy England, represents District 51, serves as the chair of the Elections Committee and vice chair Ports and Marine Resources. Is that still right, Senator?
That's correct, Gerard.
I appreciate it. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah, thanks for having me on today.
So I got to tell you, I've told the story many times about my hearing last year for reappointment to the lottery board when right. you sort of lightened things up. They got a little tense. Senator Hybrine, not a fan of the lottery.
That's right.
And he was questioning, and I've told the story how you raised your hand to ask a question of me as I was staying at the podium, and you said, "Do you think REO Speedwagon ought to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?"
That's right.
The best all-time question in a Senate hearing ever right there.
And a lot was riding on your answer, I'm sure.
Exactly. Well, speaking of which, Rhino, how about Foreigner? They
made it on the ballot, but they didn't get the votes to make it in the hall.
Dang it. That's crazy. All right, Senator, so the legislative session is a winding down, shall we say. We're headed into, might we call it conference week instead of conference weekend?
I think that's appropriate. Yeah, we're going to be conferencing all week, so conference week fits for this week.
So explain to the audience, how do we get to bills going to conference? What causes that?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, that's a process a lot of people probably don't understand. But, you know, when we pass a bill in the Senate, and if it goes over to the House and they amend our bill in any way, it then comes back to the Senate for us to either concur or not concur with their amendments. And if we don't concur, you can not concur and invite conference, which means you get three appointed House members, three appointed Senate members, and they will get together and try to hash out the differences between the amendments. And look, sometimes there is no agreement, so the bill will die in conference, but other times you'll come out with other things in a bill. We may have a bill that died previously, and we'll have code sections open, so you'll see some of that language get snuck back into another bill. I say snuck back in. We do our jobs and read it, but it provides that opportunity for us, I should say. But it's a very detailed process, but we are focused now on just the bills in the conferences.
Okay. Mm. So let's handicap a couple of them, if you will.
Absolutely.
Your thoughts. Let's talk with mobile sports betting.
Okay.
What do you think about that one?
So mobile sports betting, I know it's it's in conference, obviously. It's something that my friend Representative Urey has been pushing over in the House. We had a hearing on it. I was on the gaming committee my last term, and I'm not this year, I would say fortunately, because this issue has been a big one. But look, I tell everybody, the regular average Joe on the streets that see me and know I'm a senator, one of the top issues they come and ask me about is, hey, am I going to be able to bet on sports on my phone soon in Mississippi? So I think people like the idea of it, but I think where we are, there's still a pretty big gap in an agreement being reached, and that's in the area of consumer protection and also in the area of protecting our brick-and-mortar casinos, how we can keep this destination-type, you know, tourism-type gaming that we have in Mississippi. But if we can get through that gap or fill that gap there, we'll hopefully see that in Mississippi.
Okay. Yeah. So at this point, I think what happened is Representative Urey's bill assigned to the gaming committee headed by Senator David Blunt. He, too, did a strike call, as I recall.
That's right.
And essentially that sends it to conference. And so we've got, I think, conferees assigned, and they'll huddle up and sort this out and see if we can get something.
That's right.
Where we are.
And, of course, we also have other bills. You know, everything, they're not supposed to, but everything has strings tied to other bills. This one being our Tidelands legislation, where we're trying to, you know, shore that up a little bit. So I'm not sure where we will get
okay
on that.
All right, so the ballot initiative was something that, of course, we've had some false starts on.
Right.
Now, I think year three of
That's
attempting
right.
to restore what the state constitution provides for, maybe with some adjustments there to allow the citizens perhaps to make or amend statute as opposed to amending the Constitution, which is what currently
right.
The Constitution provides for. However, there's a little math problem in the Constitution, unfortunately.
Right.
So this thing gets passed by the House again, goes over to the Senate. It just feels like, Senator, that there's really no appetite for a ballot initiative that would be put on the ballot by the citizens, a way for the citizens to directly, I guess, redress their government in the Senate. Just doesn't feel like there's an appetite for that.
Yeah, well, and look, the Senate's the more deliberative body. We're way more cautious when we look at legislation that comes our way. And, of course, our committee chairman may have their own ideas of what something should look like, and that's where you end up on that. I do think we got a little closer, at least early on this year, to getting that. I think there is an agreement that, you know, we don't want to see something go into the Constitution via ballot initiative. We want to keep it to the limited to statutory law, going
okay.
to the statutes. Of course, the big difference this year, I don't know that it was the signatures required. It was the amount of votes required once it gets on the ballot. I think we were at 60% and then 67%. So that went the opposite direction during negotiations, and sometimes that breaks negotiations down. Look, that's what I do in my legal practice all the time. And if you have somebody that goes one way or the other, it can end up kind of just putting a stop to that. And that's where we ended up this year.
Yes, Senator David Parker is the one who added those amendments. And what he said on the program last week, Senator, was that it was an attempt to get sufficient votes from the Senate on the floor to pass something that perhaps this adjustment, I assume that's through conversations he had with senators who in general oppose the concept. Mm-hmm. And okay, well, maybe if we had a higher threshold in terms of the number who cast a ballot having to vote on the measure, and then those who vote for the measure, a 67% threshold for it to pass. That's what he said. Was that was his effort to try to get more senators on board.
Yeah, and I think that's correct. And you know, we hear about bills having bipartisan support all the time. I think this bill had bipartisan concerns on it.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we're elected officials, we're the representatives, and we're supposed to do our job up here. And I think there's just a fear that there's a lot of money that can go into a ballot initiative process and just bypass the legislature completely. And of course, we do our homework. We look at everything very closely. We want to make sure that it doesn't violate any other laws. We want to make sure that it serves our communities and our constituents very well. And I think there's just some concern there. But look, I'm hopeful we get there. I know folks want a ballot initiative, and I would like to see us get there.
The lieutenant governor, just finishing up, has expressed the same concern that you just alluded to. Was would that maybe some well-funded out-of-state interest would come in and take advantage of the process perhaps to get something they want passed that that maybe is not really consistent with state values.
Yes, I think so. I mean, look, with the Dobbs case that originated here in Mississippi, I mean, we've got a big target on our back nationally from more pro-choice type groups with the issue of abortion. And that's one that you know, people have concerns with. Do we write that completely out of a ballot initiative? Yeah. And then if we do that, is it the true ballot initiative, right? So we've got to look at that. And it's easier for people to dump more money in and to get their message out with technology the way it is today. So it's a changed process, and we're aware of that when we try to set the numbers involved with the ballot initiatives.
Gotcha. All right, let's talk about Medicaid. Mm-hmm. That's also been an issue that's probably got more attention and more discussion under the dome, perhaps, than years past.
That's right.
Since Medicaid expansion has been available to the states, going back to 2014. So, again, we've got two contrasting, competing measures, if you will, between the House and the Senate. The House's bill would provide for full expansion, just meaning that those whose income is up to 138% of the federal poverty level would qualify, whereas the Senate's version would only qualify those people up to 100% of the federal poverty level. Both had a work requirement. The House's was a little more lax than the Senate's in that respect. This looks like something that we're going to go to conference. We are going to conference on, but I was suggesting earlier that both the lieutenant governor and the speaker have said we ought to have a public hearing on this.
Right. Yes, and there will be. The conferees will be meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
Is my understanding Tuesday at 3:00, and folks can tune in and watch that discussion. Now, where the discussion goes, I can't say, but I know what I voted for in the Senate does not seem to be close to what the House wants. Again, you mentioned the House wants full coverage, and what the Senate plan does is we actually address what's the so-called coverage gap. Anyone who makes too much money to be on Medicaid currently but not enough to purchase one of the fully subsidized plans off of the exchange. So that would be 100 to 138%, whereas ours would stop at 100%. And I've always said I'd be willing to talk about how do we provide medical coverage for the working poor. And I think the Senate plan does that. And I was a solid no until we got to that point. But I think we've got a good conservative type Medicaid plan in the Senate. And if we can keep it the same, I'll continue to support it. But I won't support anything without a working requirement on it.
Let's talk about this on the other side of the break. We got
Absolutely.
Senator Jeremy England in the Element Well studio coming right back.
How could it?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
The unmistakable sounds of Boston. That's the great, late great Brad Delp on lead vocals. We're talking to Jeremy England here in the Element Well studio. So back on this Medicaid issue. So I want to say a couple of things because first, you're right in that what has been traditionally, historically referred to as the coverage gap.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that's a term that's been morphed a bit. And been kind of utilized by strong proponents of Medicaid expansion to extend it to mean something that was never intended to mean. It does, in fact, refer to those who make too much money to
Right.
qualify for subsidies in the ACA exchanges where they can buy private coverage. That's been around since 2012. But they don't qualify for Medicaid in states that have not expanded to include non-disabled adults that have income. Mm-hmm. The state of Mississippi does have coverage for non-disabled adults in what they call the the caretaker group, if you will. But it's
right.
It's up to, what, 25-23%. It's very, very small.
That's right.
Amount. And so you'd have this coverage gap between whatever that number is up to 100. That is absolutely correct. And so when the Senate and Senator Blackwell, as I've heard him use that term by the senators, they're absolutely correct in that. And so the Senate's bill would address that, quote, coverage gap. However, on the other hand, I'll say this. I've talked to a number of providers mm-hmm. that have all said they'd much rather deal with Medicaid and even take a lower reimbursement mm-hmm. than they would the private carriers who sell coverage in the exchanges. That those carriers are extremely difficult to deal with. And we're seeing this a lot in the healthcare industry where the private insurers who are in the business of making a profit are working overtime to deny claims.
Right.
That that's become a bigger problem. And they also are extremely slow paying, whereas reality is Medicaid pays a lot faster and right. is a lot easier to deal with. It's kind of the opposite of what you'd expect, where to these providers, government is preferred over the private sector in terms of reimbursement. So that's going on. The other thing that I've seen in a real-life example of is there's an open enrollment period in the exchanges for private coverage that doesn't exist in Medicaid. So you got people, once you launch it, mm-hmm. that have that issue. Something else I point out is, even though it is true that once someone, for those who are enrolled in the exchanges or apply for coverage in the exchanges, if they qualify for Medicaid in a state that's expanded, the federal government is supposed to direct them to Medicaid. And there's this concern that all those people currently enrolled in Mississippi would be shifted over to Medicaid, thus increasing the cost to the state. Fact is, in every single state in the country that has expanded, 40 of them, there's still millions enrolled in that income range. And nobody can explain that to me, including the Commissioner of Insurance, who was on the program a week or so ago. So
right.
All that to say, I think we need a lot more information on this deal.
We do. And look, anytime the government gets involved, things get complicated, right? And,
yeah.
and this is a government-provided welfare program. And my concern is once we start expanding those benefits to reach the 100 to 138%, how much do those individuals have to make after that in order to make up for the benefits they're receiving from the government? So in other words, they hit a wall where they're basically chained to this welfare system and turn down a raise or turn down a promotion because it costs them more in benefits. We can't blame those people because that's the system that gets set up. But I've seen it happen, and I really think that's one of the reasons why our labor force participation rate is so low, is because there are so many benefits, you know, especially after COVID, where folks were getting paid for sitting at home. When you see that kind of thing happen, people just they learn how to live that way, and then the likelihood of them going back to work or doing anything to advance themselves it shrinks, and we see the middle class shrink, which is what America has always been built on. And that's my concern, and that's why I was comfortable with the Senate plan filling the actual, as you say, the actual coverage gap between about 25% 100% of the federal poverty level and a working requirement, because we want these folks working too, if they can.
Well, how are they getting income if they're not working? Explain that.
You know, I don't know, but I'll tell you this. So I do workers' comp defense work that's my real job that
okay.
puts food on the table. Typically, in workers' comp, you try to get workers back to work within the first 30 days
sure.
of an injury.
Sure.
If the longer they're out of work, the likelihood of them ever going back to work decreases tremendously. And if you get somebody that's out of work for 90 days at a time, it almost drops to zero. And I think back to COVID, look, we were out for 90 days. And then the ever since then, we've seen, you know, hey, we're hiring, come work. And I think we're seeing that play out. I don't know where the income comes from. I don't know if more people shifted to seasonal work. I don't know. I would be bored out of my mind if I didn't
sure.
work. And of course,
well, me
too. I really work two jobs. But I don't know where their money's coming from, but we're not seeing them in the workforce, and that's what we've got to change.
But couldn't we also say the same about the Senate plan, is that people will try to manage their income so that they qualify for Medicaid and stay below that, although they could get fully subsidized coverage in the exchange if they moved into that category. However, you do realize that all that ends at the end of 25. It's no longer 0% premium, so it reverts to what it was before American Rescue Plan was enacted.
That's right. And look, that's my concern with full expansion, too. You know, if the federal government ever pulls back the entire program, say if they did that to try to get us all to go to single-payer health care, if they did that, we would be on the hook. And I really, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Oh, I think that's where we're headed.
One of the concerns that I have. Right.
The providers are going to push us in that direction because they're tired of dealing with the private carriers, even though they get paid more than they do from Medicaid and Medicare. It's just become such a hassle for them.
Right.
That many of them that I've talked to, it's anecdotal, but it's a number of them that I'm social friends with that have told me about that.
That's right.
I just wonder if it makes sense as part of this hearing process to bring in not association people, you've heard a lot from them, but actual providers, actually the people that are working in clinics, in hospitals that have to deal with Medicaid, Medicare, and insurance companies, and let them lay out kind of what their experience is to inform the body in making their decision.
Yeah, look, that would certainly be helpful information. And I would say even bring the lady or gentleman that sits at their front desk that might only be working 30 hours a week, because that's who I think about being in the coverage gap. You know, people that I know personally that have children, their children are, of course, eligible for Medicaid, but they make, you know, above that 25% make too much, and they don't have health care. They're working at a doctor's office, but they just don't, you know, a lot of times those are part-time jobs because they'll have children that need to get off after school and things like that. And those are people doing what they can, but just not able to take care of themselves like they should.
Well, the bigger thing to me is with the low labor participation rate, I know this is something the lieutenant governor focuses on, talks about quite a bit. We have the lowest in the country. You could just fall off a log out on the street somewhere and go find somebody and say, hey, come on, you're not working. Right. I mean, it seems to me like our House and Senate ought to go talk to the people that aren't working and say, why aren't you working?
Right. Yeah, and look, child care is super expensive. Again, health care is super expensive. We've got a lot of things. We just passed a bill to give a tax credit, as a matter of fact, to it's on the governor's desk for employers that will provide the instructional material or the instructions to community colleges to help us with our workforce development.
I
think that's going to be a big help, is helping people get into better paying jobs by learning a new trade or advancing their skills in their current trade.
Final thing I guess I'll say about this whole debate is which seems to now include a lot of the discussion about, well, gee, if we only cover up to 100%, we can let the people between 100 and 138 get their subsidized coverage in the exchanges. A couple of things I want to say about that. First, that's still so-called, quote, Obamacare expansion. There are no exchanges without Obamacare. It's still expanding health care coverage to people through the Affordable Care Act. Second thing is, it's still welfare. So saying that we're not providing welfare by putting them on the exchanges, that's false. It's still welfare. It's actually more expensive welfare. Seems like, Senator, we've gotten to a point, and this is just kind of a general thought, where, well, if the federal government's paying for it, it's really costing us nothing. It's not? Sure. My taxes are a lot higher to the federal government than the state.
That's right. Look, federal money is still taxpayer dollars. It's not we can't ignore that, and you're absolutely correct on that. But what I think it does, we also have to remember the amount of federal dollars that Mississippi gets already anyways. And then I just don't like having those kind of strings attached to Washington.
Look,
we see it in this DEI business and in the Title IX business where food programs and lunch programs are being pulled away from states because they're not doing what the federal government wants them to do, and that's just ridiculous. I do not like those types of mandates, and we get them whenever we tether ourselves to the federal dollar.
And unfortunately, we're the most tethered of all the 50 states.
That's correct.
3-1, I think, is the last ratio. If you hang around?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We got Senator Jeremy England. When we come back, can you take some questions about PERS?
Sure.
The Public Employees Retirement System.
I'm here to take questions.
All right. Senator Jeremy England is our guest in the Element Well studio.
I'm eastbound up, watch on Bandit Run.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on
Super Talk Mississippi.
The great Alan Parsons. Unique style and sound, for sure. Very talented individual. We're talking to Jeremy England, the senator who represents District 51. So give us an update on a bill that I mentioned on the air last week that you were involved in, 2681, dyslexia.
That's right, yeah, and I appreciate you mentioning that last week, Gerard.
Sure.
So 2681, what it does is it expands the qualifications and the training that can be available for someone to become a dyslexia therapist in Mississippi. We have other states that do other programs, nationally recognized and certified programs, but in Mississippi we kind of had only one track. You had to get this specific master's degree to be considered a dyslexia therapist. And so we've opened that up. We've also granted reciprocity for other states to use, which is helpful because not everyone uses the Department of Ed to give their licenses out. For example, Texas uses the Department of Health. And so anyways, we were able to expand that. We're going to be able to put more dyslexia therapists here in Mississippi, people who are already qualified and should be able to claim that title now, with the passage of this bill, we'll be able to do so. So that's going to open up a lot more availability of this throughout the state, because we do have, look, 1 in 5 children in Mississippi have dyslexia. And the thing about that is 50% of your NASA scientists have dyslexia. These are high IQ individuals, but you also look at 50% of your prison population has been shown to have dyslexia.
Interesting.
And you can see where that gets off the tracks. You know, you're in third grade, fourth grade, you're not reading with everyone else, you can't figure out what's going on, and these dyslexia therapists, if we can get them out there, hopefully bring those kids back to the front of the classroom, remediate their issue, and once they're remediated, they learn how to read the way that or use language the way that it works for their minds, they go back to their regular public schools and excel.
Okay.
Typically. So, anyways, that's a great bill.
The governor did not sign it, but it became law on the calendar.
That's correct, yes. So the governor was hearing from the one group that had written the previous bill. And, of course, look, you get a sense of proprietorship whenever you draft a bill and you're kind of the founder, so to speak, of the issue. But it was time for a change. And I know the governor the governor wants to work on dyslexia therapy in Mississippi. He has that concern. As a matter of fact, I think he had worked with these individuals previously, so hearing from both, look, it wasn't, it didn't hurt my feelings that he didn't sign it and just let it become law.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that, and I appreciate, look, I appreciate he didn't veto it.
Yeah.
We had a unanimous vote in both the House and the Senate, so I think we're going to see some good things come from that, and this is just the first step. We're going to have to do other things to try to get these therapists into our public schools at some point. Well, they already are, but more predominantly in our public schools.
It's a more pervasive issue, I think, than a lot of people realize.
It is.
Let's talk about, there was a bill, this is from Seth, Tishomingo County, the bill that would make justice court judges nonpartisan.
Yes, so we passed that bill in the Senate. It was a House bill, came to the Senate. We amended it, and they concurred with our changes. So that bill does go to the governor's desk now. So if the governor signs that, justice court judges will be nonpartisan, just like other judges. And I know there's some concern from both parties on that. But as an elections chairman, I can't be partisan, right? I mean, I've got to look at these from an objective standpoint, and judges should not be partisan. No other judges are partisan, but Justice Court judges are. And this came from the Justice Court Association. They wanted this. This was pushed by leadership, their leadership. So yes, that's going to the governor's desk, and I think he has maybe until the middle of this week to – actually, no, he'll have longer than that because I don't think that enrolled bill has been signed yet.
Okay. All right. So let's get back to PERS, the Public Employees Retirement System. So a little background there to get us started. You know about the bill that came out of the House that would have restructured the board. It went over to the – and also would have rescinded the 2%, the scheduled 2% employer contribution increase. Went over to the Senate. Senator Chris Johnson conducted some a hearing, I should say. It was a rather lengthy one, honestly.
It was
a good hearing. Had members of the board testify. And a couple of other experts as well, I believe. But nonetheless, there was not enough traction and not enough votes in his committee to pass it out of committee, put it on the floor in the Senate. Thus, he did not put it before his committee. And so where we stand right now is there's another bill that would change, I think, the way someone could re-enter the workforce and still draw retirements. Some amendments done there. Senator David Parker introduced an amendment that would first rescind the 2% employer contribution scheduled for July 1 and also require that such action would necessitate a vote by the legislature to put it into effect. That's where we stand right now. There are concerns by PERS members that in conference, language is going to be reinserted into the bill that would restructure the board. What do you think?
Well, let me say first, when it comes to PERS, what we all in the legislature need to keep first and foremost in our mind is that these are benefits that have been earned. The retirees that are on fixed income right now, they earned that retirement, and people who are working right now towards that. So these are promises that have been made to them, so we need to keep that in mind throughout the whole process. Now, what do we do is the big question. Now, the last bill wanted to completely restructure the board and put some folks with knowledge on investments and on accounting and things like that. We heard a lot from retirees. They did not want to lose their voice on the board, and I get that. But what we also have to keep in mind, and what I think Senator Parker's amendment keeps in mind, is that these individuals, yeah, they may be voting for their representatives on the PERS board, but those PERS board members, that board can then raise taxes essentially by requiring the cities and the counties, municipalities, school boards to increase the employer input by 2%, by as much as 5%. There's one plan that said as much as 10%.
That's what the actuaries want.
That's right. That is a huge tax increase for a lot of people.
$700 million, I think.
That's right.
Full 10%.
That's right.
And close.
So we're looking at it. I mean, for some of your bigger cities and bigger counties, that might not be as big of a hit. But for some of my cities in my district and parts of my county, and look, my school superintendent, he said, look, that's job killing type of money. So we're looking at it. And I don't know where we'll get on that this year. I imagine that we could look at possibly the state just putting some money into the plan for now and then look back at it. But I'm glad that we've at least – if this passes, we will have at least delayed that 2% as people are going into their budgeting year and trying to get their budget set. That won't be something I'll have to look at this year.
For the record, I know you've heard this from constituents, especially those who are members of PERS. The concern, of course, is that by reconstituting the board, it being appointed by the governor, lieutenant governor, their main concern, of course, is modification of benefits to existing retirees or those who are in the plan under the current four tiers where they feel like benefits have been committed to them under the terms of employment. Have you heard anybody, Senator, in the legislature say, yeah, I would sign on to modifying benefits?
Yeah, absolutely no one that I've talked to has said that. And look, so much of what we do in the legislature, and we get caught up in – we've got a lot of big issues. You and I are talking about a lot of these. These are really big issues we're talking about. And if we don't help the messaging and get the truth out there, I like to tell my constituents a lot of times – give me a call. I'll tell you what's going on or read the bill, because misinformation will make it around the world before the truth takes one step. And so that's kind of what happened here. And when I talked with leadership on our end of the hall about this very issue, I said, look, we might be best to step back and punt at this time because we've lost the messaging. That bill number that we were using before had just become poison. You know, I'm getting 1,000 emails a day about it. And look, again, these are individuals on fixed income. They've worked really hard for the state of Mississippi. And they didn't want us touching that. If somebody says, hey, look, they're thinking about modifying benefits, that's all it takes. The PERS discussion goes off the rails at that point, and we don't get anywhere.
There are also concerns that the lieutenant governor is behind this restructuring because he wants to borrow money or transfer money out of the trust fund into the general fund.
That's the first time I've heard anything like
I'm
that.
I'm looking at it now.
No, I know. Yeah. Well, I don't. I
agree.
Yeah,
I have not heard completely it. False.
But again, that's just misinformation.
Right.
And look, nobody trusts people in politics, and we're all up here doing the best we can. And you know, you can't see our hearts, but we've got some really great members. I love everybody I work with in the Senate and in the House, and we're not out to hurt someone's retirement or their fixed income or anything like that. These folks ought to be playing with their grandkids or taking trips and doing that, not having to worry about this. But we do have an investment structure that we've got to get a hold of with people that are starting out, maybe with a new tier, however we do it. And that's going to be tough, and it's going to take some tough decisions, but we can do it.
So something else that sometimes gets put out there, we're about out of time, but the Supplemental Legislative Retirement Plan, there's just a lot of angst and consternation over that. The legislators get this special plan. It's all doing fine. They get an additional one to the PERS that they participate in. I've asked every legislator the last couple of weeks, Senator, I'm going to ask you, would you be in favor of just phasing out the Supplemental Legislative Retirement Plan?
Gerard, I don't even know what it is.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't do this job for the money. But look, if it's a perception that's hurting, we answer to the people. And if they don't like it, we'll deal with it.
I think it would redirect the focus and just take it off the table and out of the discussion and redirect the focus on the main program, the PERS program. It's not much.
Well, to be fair, I would say the ones that have been here that have been paid into it, just like we're doing with everyone else.
Yeah, you know. Agree with you.
Right.
Coming right back, folks. Appreciate it, Jeremy.
Thank you very much, man. Gordon.
Coming right back.
Morgan Stone has been.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. Three, two, one.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
One additional bit of info, Rhino, on the passage of these four bills by the House, the U.S. House, concerning aid for Ukraine, Israel, what do they call it, the Indo-Pacific, I think, and then the TikTok ban. And folks want to know, well, what about border control? There's a bill that's passed, H.R. 2, passed the House. Of course, it ain't getting on the floor of the Senate. Chuck Schumer's not putting it there. And it is comprehensive border control, border security. So you could certainly insert some of that language in any of these bills. It's DOA in the Senate. That's just a shame. I mean, that's where we are. These people, the Democrats, they're absolutely 100% committed to keeping the border wide open just like it is today. There's no question. You shouldn't even have to pass a bill if you think about it. The tools are available to the president today. With the swipe of a pen, shut the thing down. And I think a lot of people, including myself, are hoping we get a change in the White House, and that's the first thing that happens. Remember Joe Biden? We talked about it so many times. In 2021, 32 executive orders, right, as I've described it before, the teleprompters were removed off the Capitol steps. He was in the Oval Office signing 32 EOs already ready to go. With all that climate change and DEI, CRT crap all over. But that included reversing all of President Trump's immigration policies. Ready to go. I'm hoping the same thing is true if we get a new president, that being Donald Trump. That he reverses what got reversed and restores what was working before he left office. With respect to the PERS situation. So there's so much, as the senator said, misinformation going on there, out there. And I did see a post out on social media from a PERS member. Said the PERS assets are PERS assets. Well, that's true. They do belong to the public employees retirement system. But it should be considered that the assets were produced from the contributions made into the trust fund. They were accumulated. That's what created the system. That's what powers it financially. Well, roughly two-thirds of that comes from non-PERS taxpayers. So it's kind of disingenuous to say, oh, yeah, this is totally owned by the members of the PERS. It's owned by the state of Mississippi, is the truth. This is an instrument of the state of Mississippi. It was created by lawmakers who were voted into office by voters. So, and that's not a statement about whether or not the state is obligated to fulfill its commitments to the members. I absolutely 100% believe it is, that the state must make good on that. And I've heard nobody in the legislature say anything counter to that position. But they go on to say, they make the contrast to Social Security. And I know we've talked about this a thousand times on the show, it feels like, but there's this myth out there that the Congress raided Social Security and that's why it's going broke. That's 100% false. Categorically incorrect. Law requires Social Security to invest in the only thing its trust fund can be invested in, which are treasury bonds. U.S. United States treasury bonds. They are special issue. There's a series of special issue bonds issued by the Treasury just for Social Security. The surplus that Social Security produces when it takes in more than it pays out are invested in those bonds. Those bonds, there's a short-term version, maturity, and there's a long-term. They get redeemed on schedule, paid back with interest. The interest is one of the ways that revenues are collected to pay benefits. Unlike PERS, Social Security cannot invest in equities. Private company equities, cannot invest in bonds, in private equity funds, in real estate, and the like. It cannot do that. It's against federal law. The only thing it can invest in is treasury bills. Well, the good news is the U.S. is never going to default, never has on a treasury bill. The bad news is the returns ain't that good. And Rhino, if PERS were restricted to just that, it would have gone broke 30 years ago. Think about that. You think the return on investment of 7.25, 7.95, whatever it is, the last 30 years that PERS has achieved is less than, I've heard some say that, what could be achieved? You ain't seen nothing till you're getting 2% special issue bonds from the federal government. So it's disingenuous to make that contrast. It's total apples and oranges, and much of that's untrue. But it's just another example of the misinformation floating around out there. Well, we are out of time here today. It's been a fast but a good Monday to kick the week off. Down in Laurel tomorrow will middays be. For now, though, we're out of here. Stay safe, and God bless everyone.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.